We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Carolina Insider. From Learfield.
After taking a little time to get rested, relaxed, Adam's very tan already, even though it's just mid-April.
This is just my base tan.
We are back, and it's time for the next edition of the Carolina Insider. Adam Lucas, hello.
It does seem like it's been a long time since the last pod.
Yeah, well, it's because after the euphoria of a championship, Adam, the time just slows down as the memories wash over you.
But a lot's been happening.
A lot has been happening. We have a lot to do.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the basketball award ceremony, which was Tuesday night in Chapel Hill. Adam and I were both there. We're going to give you a firsthand account. We'll talk a little football. Spring football ended. Of course, a couple of weeks ago. Baseball, we had a lot of requests to talk a little bit of baseball. We'll do that, and we're going to take your questions on Twitter. We received a bunch to get to. So, Adam, where would you like to begin, fine sir? Well, I appreciate you wearing your top hat and your monocle, by the way, in the in the office today.
Well, I know the most about, by which I mean I was actually there and have actually seen it myself, the award ceremony.
Sure.
The other two, I'm a little less familiar with.
Well, but I know that you're going to be able to.
I'll make it up.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a concern.
Yeah. Oh, never is.
Yeah.
The award ceremony was, it was a lengthy evening.
Yes.
But a worthwhile lengthy evening, if that makes sense. I mean, it was an emotional night. It was a fun night. There was a dinner. Coach Williams spoke. I'm just trying to go through the timeline in my head here. Eric Montross got up and spoke briefly about what it meant to kind of be a national champion, which I thought was awesome. The coaches gave out the team awards, some of which are decided strictly by statistics, some of which are voted on by the team. Then there was the highlight video, and then the senior speeches, and then Coach Williams kind of ended it with a kind of a short little recap at the end. And I thought every piece of that was really, I don't know, Adam, it just felt right. It just felt like every piece of it was proper. It all belonged, and it all, everybody who spoke, I thought, just knocked it out of the park.
It was a long night, but not really in a bad way. Like, when I was thinking about it, there was nothing of that I would have cut.
Sure, right.
So, And there were five seniors, so that's
sure.
five people who are going to talk. It's not like there were only two or something.
And let me give credit. I want to say to the five seniors, and I've only been to these ceremonies since I started doing the play-by-play, so six of them, I guess, now. And sometimes you get ones where some speeches are better than others. I thought, and all five speeches were different, but I thought all five guys did a really good job. I just thought it was Candler Coker, Stillman White, Nate Britt, Isaiah Hicks, Kennedy Meeks, and I thought they all did a really good job.
And I thought they all clearly put some of themselves into it. Like, Kennedy Meeks's could have only been done by Kennedy Meeks.
Right.
And Stillman White could only be Stillman White. And I thought it was impressive. That's not easy to do.
No.
I mean, I think they all did such a good job that you sat there and thought, oh, this is no problem. But it's not easy to get up there and A, talk the way they did, and B, talk as personally as they did, because really all five of them put something real that was really important to them in there, at least one or two things, and they just sailed right through it. And I think that's harder to do than people think it is, especially when you were 21 or 22 years old.
And you have your family in attendance, you have your friends with your teammates, and those guys were very open and emotional, and yeah, I mean, I just thought they all did a really good job. And you're right about it was all something different, but they all talked about something that was incredibly personal, I guess, is the best way to put it. And really, and did so with very composed, and even if they were getting emotional, I mean, it was still in a composed way. And I just thought they all did a really good job.
There's always that kind of elusive idea of, does a team have chemistry or not, and what is it, and how do you tell? There's no way you could walk out of that room and not know that that team had excellent chemistry. That's the first one of those I've been to in forever, where there was like interplay between the guys in the audience and the guys at the podium, and they would kind of joke back and forth, and like Theo Pinson stood up and imitated Roy Williams while Roy Williams was at the podium giving a speech.
And Roy Williams was fine with it.
He loved it. He was like, all right, Theo, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And so Theo did, and it was hilarious. And I just think, and at some point we'll talk about the 2018 Tar Heels, maybe not on this pod, but a future pod. And when we do, I hope I'll remember to say, you can't just assume you're going to have that again just because you have the majority of the same guys. It's unique to this team only. And no matter who leaves or doesn't leave or who comes back or doesn't come back, that doesn't automatically come over because there'll be different pieces. And there's no guarantee it's going to be there again. So I think people should appreciate it for how unique it is. Because really, I mean, you don't have teams like that very often.
I don't know if this is true because I've never been to these similar things for other teams. To me, Tuesday night is just part about what makes Carolina what Carolina is. I just can't imagine that there's an evening like that. And I'm sure there are every now and then at other places, but I just can't imagine there's evenings like that at other places on a consistent basis. And as I said, I've been to these the last several years. And I do think this one was particularly good because when you win, obviously everybody's in a better mood. But I think it's been very similar the last couple of years, that it's a little more of an intimate gathering because it's a smaller group. And there are more people this particular year than there have been. But I think that allows a little bit of that openness and freedom for the guy. And you really get a chance to see who they are. And I think that's really neat.
I think a big part of it and a big part of what Carolina is that kind of the backbone of the night is the idea that these guys have kind of grown up together and they've got that shared experience over a period of 1 to 4 years where they've kind of developed and they've seen the other guys develop and they've matured and they've gone through things. I mean, Kennedy Meeks talked about his weight and his grades and they've all kind of shared the same struggles. And I don't think you get that other places where maybe they haven't been together for as long, and not every team's been together as long as this one, but when they are, you can tell they really value it, and they all kind of relate to each other having gone through that same thing.
I mentioned this briefly. and he would hate that we're going to talk about this. I thought Eric's speech to the guys about what it meant to be a national champion. I mean, Eric talked about the fact that he got a Sports Illustrated in the mail like this past week from 1993. And he just talked about, and I can't remember the exactly what he said, but he said something like, you can't possibly understand this right now, but it's only going to be more meaningful to you the longer this goes. And when he said that, I just kind of looked over, and I happened to be looking right at Sean May, and Sean May was sitting there nodding his head like, yeah, he's right. I understand this now because his championship was 12 years ago. I just thought that was his speech was perfect. And just to talk about how awesome Eric is, he didn't know he was giving that speech until 30 minutes before the night started, because they had worked it out that somebody else was coming to give a speech, and then there was plane troubles or something. And so they had to make a change at the last minute. And they kind of asked Eric if he would get up and do it, and he absolutely knocked it out of the park.
And he was whoever the other person was, Eric was perfect for that role, because those guys all kind of know him and respect him already.
Right.
So it wasn't like he was some guy coming off the street who was on that 93 championship team and they vaguely know who he is. They all know him and have talked to him about basketball. And I think to hear him, as he always does, kind of put it in a broader context was valuable to them. But and bonus points for having it be the exact right length.
Yeah.
It wasn't a long speech.
No, I have 5 to 7 minutes at the most.
Yeah, at the very most. And I when I was sitting there, I thought, I bet he's got a couple other points that we're going to go into. But he just went ahead and knocked it out of the park, ran around the bases, and went back to the dugout. And that was it.
He was right into the home run, like
yeah.
a jog. He yeah. wasn't trotting. He was like mid-jog.
It was a walk-off if after a walk-off you had 3 more hours after that.
I also think this is always one of my favorite events, in the sense that you get to see Roy Williams, I think, in his like most pure Roy Williams sense. And you get to see just how much he gives to Carolina basketball, how much he loves Carolina basketball, and the deep relationship that he builds with his guys. And I think you see it at this event maybe more than anything else that I get a chance to see. Because you can tell when he's up there talking how meaningful it is to him. And by it, I mean all of it. I mean his role as the head coach, his relationship with the guys, their success on the court, their success in moving through from being a young person to a college graduate. I mean, just all those things. It just all seems to come over him on this one particular evening.
Everybody loves to talk about recruiting and like, go recruit this guy because he's the number 2 ranked whatever in this state or whatever. And I think that night is a great window into why Roy Williams recruits the way he does, because he wants to feel that way about those guys, and he wants that team to be made up of guys like that. And that doesn't mean you get it right every single time. Like, eventually somebody turns out to not be what you thought they were. But that's why he put so much time into getting to know the families. He talked about the family some last night and how much he appreciated them. Getting to know the individuals beyond just how many stars are they rated.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has a good sense of how it's going to fit together at a different level than people who like to speculate about, like, well, why is he doing that? Well, there might be something more to it than what you saw on the mixtape.
Mixtape. Anything else from the banquet?
I think that if you went to that banquet not already fully understanding the importance and relationship with C.B. McGrath, both to Coach Williams and to the players, I thought that was a big kind of overarching storyline of the night.
Yep.
Just how much the players talked about him and how much they respected him. And, I mean, C.B., who I don't think of as being an incredibly emotional person. Like, I mean, he gets fired up on the bench.
Sure.
But he, next to Kennedy Meeks, who was crying before he got to the microphone, I think CB was probably the most emotional one.
Right.
Which, I mean, he's been here 14 years and he's leaving. So.
Oh, boy. When he said that he had been here 14 years, put his heart and soul into the program to make Coach Williams proud.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I mean, and then, well, hold on. Let's finish about CB. First of all, I am so happy for CB. I am just excited he's getting this opportunity. He's ready. I mean, he is ready to be a head coach. And I think Wilmington is a place that you can win. I think personally it's a good move for him because you don't have to uproot your family tremendously. I mean, it just feels like a great opportunity at the right time in a place that he can go and be successful. Now, I do think the Tar Heels are going to have to figure out a way to pick up all the things that C.B. McGrath did, which they will do. But my whole point is it will be a lot because he was extraordinarily important.
And there's so much importance in having that person who's got a familiarity with Coach Williams. And C.B. McGrath's got that both as a player and as a member of the staff for the last two decades. You don't just walk in and replace that. And I think, too, the way he kind of, I don't know, blossomed isn't the right word, but kind of came out of his shell maybe a little these last couple of years where he was willing to challenge Coach Williams.
That's exactly the word I was going to use.
I think and easy for me to say because I'm not the head coach and I don't have somebody disagreeing with me because everything I do is right. I think you need that on a staff. And I think it's especially hard with someone like Roy Williams because he's in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
If he says something, 99.9% chance he's right. But you got to have somebody who thinks that this might be the 0.1%. And I think CB wasn't always willing to do that from the day he got here when right. He was obviously much younger, as were most people except for us.
Yeah, I stay the same.
Yeah, but in the last few years, I think you really saw it. And there were some times where they would kind of go back and forth on the sideline. But they had the relationship that enabled them to do that.
Yeah, it wasn't an interesting – I mean, a couple of players even when they were addressing CB, I think it was maybe Kennedy Meeks or
Isaiah
said, yeah, thanks so much for sticking up for me when Coach Williams got angry. I think you were the only person he got more mad at than me or something like that.
You took the brunt of that off of me.
Right.
And I think CB became able to do that. And I thought, too, I thought it was interesting what he said – when he was kind of leading into the thing about spending 14 years here. And he said when he was at Kansas, all Coach Williams talked about was North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And CB said he made up his mind then he would never move to North Carolina because as a Kansas fan, he was sick of hearing about it.
Yep.
And that's exactly how we all felt about Kansas when Coach Williams got here.
Yep.
All he talked about was Kansas. Nobody wants to hear about frickin' Kansas anymore.
Wow, you dropped a frickin' in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you threw down a daggum on the championship call. But so I just thought that was so interesting to hear him say that because I'd never heard him say that before. But they felt just like we did, and that's Roy Williams. And he doesn't really talk about Kansas anymore because he's got, you know, three championships and 15 years of awesomeness here at Carolina to talk about.
When I said that I stayed the same age, do you know what that made me think of?
No.
No, man. No, man, I'll tell you. That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey, you and your brilliance.
I'm impressed you were able to get your ringtone on here so quickly.
The other thing I was going to say, when we were talking about CB, saying 14 years, make Coach Williams proud. And then Coach Williams got up and said there wasn't a day that Ann made him proud. Woo-hoo-hoo! Nate Britt.
Oh, yeah.
Telling Coach Williams he had never met Coach Smith, but he had to imagine Coach Smith was proud of the way that Roy Williams was running North Carolina basketball. I mean, Adam, what? It was like a whole tornado of perfectness at this moment. You have Nate Britt, the crafty senior who helped lead the team back from disappointment the year before to the title, bringing in Coach Smith and hitting right. I mean, the chord that like struck to Roy Williams' heart. Unbelievable moment.
And Coach Williams later mentioned that exact thing when he was kind of wrapping up the night.
Yeah.
And he got emotional just relaying that Nate Britt had said that an hour before.
Yeah.
Nate Britt kind of sneakily Oh, he'll hit you right in the heart.
He was really good.
Well, remember his senior day thing against Duke when he talked about how he wore number zero here because nobody ever believed in him. He's trying to prove everybody wrong. And then everybody just kind of overlooked the fact that he said, but I'll never wear number zero again because of how the people at Carolina have made me feel.
Come on, Nate Britt.
I mean, that was pretty good stuff right there. And then, I mean, yeah, he gave a great speech. And he talked about how awesome his parents were. Whew. Fine young men.
Oh, Tar Heels. We love you so much.
I wouldn't mind if basketball just ended right there. Right, that's the end of it. It'll never be better than that. We've decided not to do it anymore. But by like October or November, I want to do it again.
We have received a lot of questions about the assistant coach position. I am about 99.9% sure what is going to happen, but that has not been officially announced in any way. And I would think there's probably some HR kind of things that have to happen, so we're not going to address that at the moment. But just know that obviously the Tar Heels are aware that they need to fill that position and are working hard to do so.
The players certainly quasi-officially announced it.
Yes.
And the other thing was, in the story on Go Heels, we wrote about the funny story that Coach Williams told about when CB found out he got the job, and CB had given this emotional talk, and then after CB sat down, Coach Williams said, well, CB, I just want to let you know, not everybody was sad that you left, because 30 minutes after you got the job, Sean May came to me and wanted to know if he could have your office. And I said, Roy Williams, said yes, and Sean said that was good because he had already moved in. And so I put that in the story knowing this was going to happen. I've already gotten emails from people saying, are you saying Sean May's taking that job? No, just the physical office space.
Right.
It's a good office.
Yeah, it is a good office.
And Sean May was kind of sharing space with Hoots.
Right.
So
now Hoots gets to have his office back and
right.
Sean May gets a different office.
So
a physical office.
That story was only about the physical office space.
That was a funny story, though. That was funny.
Well, and to bring it up at that time, because CB had just...
No,
like,
yeah. It was heavy in the room at the moment.
He had totally wrecked the entire room.
Yeah, it was heavy.
Yeah. Phew.
Anything else basketball-related before we move forward?
Well, do we need to talk about Kennedy Meeks?
Probably. By the way, I got a ceiling roof champions shirt.
From Kennedy Meeks?
No, not from Kennedy Meeks, but I now from my good friends at Chapel Hill Sportswear. Which, by the way, so I went to Chapel Hill Sportswear.
What day did you go?
Saturday.
Apparently, it's been sheer pandemonium
there. Dude, it was absolutely packed. But here's the reason why. I mean, they've got all the good stuff
on a random Saturday.
Yeah, they've
got
packed. So let me just say, and this is just from personal experience. Go to Chapel Hill Sportswear if you want your stuff.
Yes.
They've got the best stuff. But I got that one. I got the black one, that the locker room one, because they had run out in Phoenix. Come on!
Next year, let's do it alphabetical order.
Right, yeah. Most importantly, first name and last name. Keep both of those in mind.
Yeah. Williams should obviously come after Lucas. Duh, hello.
I got... my kids each a shirt. My wife got a shirt. My son wanted a keychain for some reason.
Sure, he didn't need to put his keys on there.
And
what do
you mean
hold on,
for some
look
reason? At this. Got it right here. I really like this. Look at this. Got one of those big Nalgene bottles, you know? And it says National Champions on there.
I mean, I would call that a water bottle, but if you want to call it whatever you just did,
Nalgene.
That's fine. I don't know what that is. Is that the thing that won't kill you?
Like, yeah.
It doesn't have the chemicals.
I'm BPA-free over here, Adam.
Well, yes.
So anyway, go to Chapel Hill Sportswear. They've got the best stuff. All right, Kennedy Meeks. A lot of people really are fired up that Kennedy Meeks did not get the Final Four Most Outstanding Player and or the team MVP, which would have... put Kennedy Meeks' jersey into the rafters. I understand that sentiment. I do. And as I think I said the last time we had a podcast, I was so out of it last time we had a podcast because I only slept like 2 hours in the last like 3 days. I totally think they couldn't even. I was thinking about something else. That's why I started laughing.
Were you getting ready to stand up and do like your Michael Phelps stretches right then?
No.
Oh, okay.
So it's not for the pod what I was thinking about. I think Kennedy Meeks would have been a 100% defensible choice for Final Four Most Outstanding Player. 100%. I also think Joe Barry is a perfectly reasonable choice to be the Final Four Most Outstanding Player. I didn't vote on it. You didn't vote on it. Whoever did vote on it, I thought Joe Barry was a fine choice. I also could have definitely seen Kennedy Meeks. And multiple people at the awards ceremony talked about coaches and players. Talked about how Kennedy's contributions in the tournament were invaluable and the Tar Heels don't win the championship without Kennedy Meeks, especially Hubert Davis, who went on for a long time about Kennedy Meeks's value to this team, particularly in the postseason. So had Kennedy Meeks been voted the Final Four Most Outstanding Player, I think that 100% would have been fine and correct, although I'm not saying Joel Berry is incorrect. I think either one of them would have been fine. Justin Jackson was the team MVP this year for Carolina basketball. The people who voted on the team MVP were the players. So they know that they voted for two things in the award ceremony. The team captain, which they voted for Joel Berry, and team MVP, in which they voted for Justin Jackson. Justin Jackson is the team MVP.
Yeah. I mean, it's really two separate issues, as you just very nicely said. Should Kennedy Meeks have won the Final Four MVP? Possibly yes. As you said, we didn't get a vote on that.
Right.
And I don't know who votes on that.
And I don't know who voted.
I suspect it's some batch of NCAA bureaucrats.
There are plenty.
Yes. So there's probably a special committee. So, but once that was done, then you move on to issue number two. Should Kennedy Meeks be the team MVP for 2017 North Carolina? No. That's not a negative towards Kennedy Meeks. He had, as you said, as everybody said at the award ceremony, Carolina doesn't win the national championship without Kennedy Meeks. But that doesn't mean you're the MVP, because you could say that same thing about eight other guys.
Yep.
In no way is this some kind of slap at Kennedy Meeks' production or him as a person or his quality of play for his ability to be a Tar Heel, anything like that. It's just that Justin Jackson was the MVP.
Yeah.
10 years from now, when we look back at the 2017 national champions and the MVP is Justin Jackson, we're going to go, oh, yeah, that's right. That was the year he was awesome. It wouldn't have made sense any other way. The thing I don't get is people really seem invested in this whole put Kennedy Meeks in the rafters thing. And I understand it's because Carolina won and he was good in those games. But Danny Green, not in the rafters. Jawad Williams, not in the rafters. Kendall Marshall won the Cousy Award, not in the rafters. There's a lot of good players who aren't up there.
When you are a member of a national championship team, you are in the rafters by the team banner that's on the other side. No matter what. And I think forever, when people look at that 2017 banner, whenever it goes up, they are going to think about Justin Jackson and Joel Berry and Luke May's shot and Kennedy Meeks and everybody else. I mean, it's the team. It's that team, and that's part of what made this group special. Kennedy Meeks kind of de facto is in the rafters because that 2017 banner is going to have his handprints all over it because of what he did against Oregon and what he did blocking shots at the end against Gonzaga and what he did against Arkansas in the post or whatever. I mean, he is in the rafters, even though the number 3 Meeks jersey maybe isn't. And as Eric talked about at that awards banquet, I mean, that's the thing. It only gets, your legend only grows it with time. I mean, in 2040, people are going to be talking about how 7'6" Kennedy Meeks just just, you know, blocked Nigel Williams Goss's shot with his armpit and then took a bite out of the ball as he spit it forward to Justin Jackson for the dunk.
I always think about it as, like, when they come back to a game in 10 years, is there going to be anyone who has trouble remembering who Kennedy Meeks is if his jersey's not in the rafters? No. When you see him, you're going to turn to your kid or your spouse or whoever and go, hey, there's Kennedy Meeks. Carolina would not have won the championship in 17 without him. That's all you need.
Yep. And I don't know this because my jersey is not in the rafters.
Right.
And yet. I don't have a championship banner that I helped produce. But I'm guessing I'm just going to pick someone. I'm guessing Raymond Felton. When Raymond Felton comes into the Smith Center with his kids one day, it's not going to be, there's my number two jersey. He will eventually say, there's my number two jersey. But the first thing he's going to say is, there's that 2005 national championship banner that our team won.
Antoine Jameson has talked about that before. I mean, he's in the front row.
Yeah. Retired. Yeah. Nobody's going to wear 33.
And he's talked before about how he wishes he had one on the other end, as do I, because of stupid Utah. But I'm not still bitter 19 years later. He's talked before about how he wishes he had one at that end. And let's Harrison Barnes, for example. He's got his jersey up there. Do you think he would rather have it at the other end, like if you had a choice?
Right.
Which do you think would be a more fulfilling experience, to do that with your team and get to have all those moments that we saw the 17 team get to have, or to, I don't even remember what he did to qualify to go up there, some sort of second team All-America by the Sporting News or something.
Right.
And they, like, they call you one day and say, hey, you're going up there. Which do you think he would remember forever?
Right.
Kennedy Meeks got the one with his team.
Let's go to Twitter. What do you say?
Okay.
Brad Broders. I know Brad. Brad came up and spoke to us in, was it Memphis? I think it's in Memphis.
All our destinations run together.
They do. In Green Mem Phoenix.
Greenville got another tournament thanks to the Tar Heels.
Did they?
Yeah.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah. Basically because the Tar Heels talked about how awesome it was and Duke lost. So they were like, we want to send it back there. That place was awesome.
Brad would like to know if we have any release date targets or any cool nuggets about the book that you are writing about the championship, which is called Redemption. Is that correct? Is that the name of the book?
Yes.
And a very popular question, if there will be a season-ending DVD like there was in 2005 and 2009.
Yeah, people do want to know when they're getting their DVD.
Would you like me to address the DVD first, or would you like to address the book?
I assume you'll address the DVD, and then we'll leave the country immediately.
To the best of my knowledge, there is not going to be a championship DVD produced by North Carolina like there was in 2005 and 2009. As of this moment, me talking, that is the case. Now, I guess that could possibly change. The reason for that is quite simply the market has just changed in the 8 years since the Tar Heels won last. And really, the 09 one was, it wasn't a slam dunk that it was going to happen because, I mean, when's the last time you bought a DVD, right? And I'm not trying to put down DVDs. Sorry, big DVD.
The DVD lobby is going to boycott the pod.
But it's just different now. And so the cost you incur in doing it, for getting the rights to the footage, the radio, the audio rights, the video rights, the time that you put in. I mean, it is, I'm going to tell you, because I was a part of both of the previous two, and it's not easy to do. You may think it's easy to do. In fact, most things that I do, people think it's really easy to do. That particular thing is not easy to do. It takes a lot of time. There is a ton of footage. So it's just not as easy as you may think. So having said all of that, the demand and that particular market is just different than it used to be. Now, there have been some discussions about maybe doing some streaming thing that there may we may do, and there may be some stuff, and that's all hypothetical and just kind of being discussed right now. But at this point, at this moment, I do not think there is going to be a physical DVD because I do not think the market supports it.
Because you've done this before, I feel like I can ask you this and you'll know the answer. When I was watching the highlight video at the awards ceremony,
yes,
the thing that blows my mind about that is, conservatively, there's hundreds, probably thousands of hours of footage,
mm-hmm.
right? How in the world, and it was Josh Rivas did the sort of compiling, and he and right. John Legette put it, compiled all the footage and shot all the stuff. How do they know, as the season progresses, what's the good stuff? Like, if they got a file on their computer of good stuff
right.
for season-ending video, or do they have to do all that in the 2 weeks since the season ends?
No, I mean, I think one thing that we, and by we, I'm using this as the media department, have learned is you can't wait until the end and then just try to, you've got to do it as you go. And so you archive, you save, you organize, and then it's all there at the end. And I do think, and I'm speaking for them a little bit, because I shot exactly 0 seconds of the footage that was used, or shot 0 seconds of footage, period, this year. I'm sure some of it is you shoot some stuff with that video in mind, or if you get some kind of piece of video when it occurs, you think, okay, well, this is something when I get back, I definitely want to save this, and this is something that could be used for that. So I do think it has to be a proactive approach throughout the year for the kind of other stuff, not just the raw highlights of the game and that kind of stuff,
right.
but the kind of other stuff that occurs throughout the year. And some of it is also there are so many more video elements that occur throughout the year that some of that stuff is already put together. And so while you may not use, like, for example, when the Tar Heels went to visit Pearl Harbor, you may not use all of that footage, but you know you've already put that particular piece together, and there may be one or two shots that you want to take out of that to represent that portion of the year in the video. So I do think it is a very proactive approach as you go through.
I think that's another component of the whole DVD thing is so much more of that stuff is already out there via social media than it
sure.
ever even thought about being in 09.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, people, and by the time people hear this, they may already have it because it's coming very soon. The highlight video, everybody loves it. And Josh and John did an unbelievable job. But a lot of it is stuff that I don't want to say already, but it's you at least have an idea about because you kind of do it as you go. Now, there's also just watching the highlights of the championship game alone and kind of all that stuff is fun. But yes, it's just different now. And in fact, I think, and I might be wrong on this, I know for a fact Duke did not do one in 2010 nor 2015. I don't think any other team has done one internally since Carolina did one in 09. I don't think. I know Duke didn't do it the two times that they won since then. So we'll just have to wait and see. Which, hey, by the way, this is neither here nor there. Just saying Duke won it twice made me think of this. Since Roy Williams has been back, I think it's crazy. So he's been at Carolina for 14 years. 10 of the 14 years since he's been the head coach at Carolina, the national championship has been won by one of four schools: Carolina, Connecticut, Duke, or Florida. Isn't that crazy? Carolina has three, Connecticut has three, Duke has two, Florida has two in that time period. I just think that's wild. And then Kansas has one, Kentucky has one, Villanova has the one, and somebody else has one in there.
Well, and
Louisville has one.
To break it down even farther, a third of the time it's either Carolina or Duke.
Yeah.
That's a good reminder for next January or February when all the idiots start writing articles about, like, oh, well, Carolina Duke is like the Louisville Kentucky of the ACC. No, it's not.
No, bro. You're talking the – I mean, you're closing in on the two most successful programs in the current landscape of college basketball. I mean, Kansas and Kentucky are the other two, obviously. In those 13 years, they have each won it once. Duke and Carolina have won it a combined five times. So, no. Hey, Pat 40, don't come at me with that.
It's only something you would ever say if you're trying to purposely take the clearly wrong stance to get attention.
To get people wrong.
That's the only possible way you would ever say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Carolina James sent in a tweet. Joel Berry had to get his fingers glued during the tournament. She heard something about him biting his nails or cuticles. Do we have any information on this? You have a face like you have no information on this.
I just saw Joel Berry in the parking lot and he seemed fine.
He does bite his, he said, and there was one game, I can't remember what game it was, maybe Arkansas? Yeah. Or I can't remember where he has said that he actually has a problem with it, that he gets, like, it's just a nervous habit, but he does it to the point where it'll split his fingers or something. I'm no doctor. Joel Berry, stop biting your hand.
I'm going to take the opposite stance. Joel Berry can do whatever in the world he wants to.
Well, we already know that.
If he wants to bite his toes, I'm fine. Just keep playing basketball like you are. You're doing great, big guy. Keep it up.
I'm just kind of a quick reminder. Adam and I can't really talk about recruiting. We have a bunch of questions about individual recruits. The reason that we can't do that is that we are both in some form or fashion affiliated with the athletic department. And so we can't specifically talk about guys until they sign. Just assume that we are under the same umbrella as the coaches in that regard, because we don't want to say anything that's going to get anybody in trouble.
Jaleek Felton, looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah. See, now you can say something like that. Yeah. That's fine. Or I can say, hey, Andrew Platik had a nice game in the Jordan Brand Classic, Adam, 22 points. We can say stuff like that. But we can't say, hey, did you hear Roy Williams is going to visit X in his home today? Can't say that.
At least three people just Googled X to see who
is that
Roy
somebody's
Williams.
Nickname? We have a lot of questions about the spring game. Now, I have to fully say, neither Adam nor I were at the spring game, because it was right after the Tar Heels had gotten back from Phoenix in the Final Four. Now, I have talked to people in football, people who were there. This is kind of the feel that I got from this spring. It seems like the defense right now for Carolina football is ahead of the offense. And is that a surprise to anyone? Because let's not forget that the Tar Heels are without from last year. Their starting quarterback, their top two running backs, their top three wide receivers, and multiple starters on the offensive line.
that'll deplete your offense.
Yes. So I do think that it was a spring kind of – I think you have to separate. The spring for the defense was much more of a, okay, this needs to be more of a polish up. Let's get things to where – yeah, let's kind of get these more in place where we want them and understand that this, when the season starts, this particular unit needs to be pretty ready to go. Whereas on the offensive end, I mean, there are still dozens of questions, I think, for Carolina football on that. And they had a bunch of injuries. I mean, I know by the end of spring, the only two running backs who were practicing were both walk-ons. And so I mean, there are just so many questions right now, some of which just aren't going to be answered until the end of August camp, and some of them aren't going to be figured out truly until, I think, in the middle of the year. Because, I mean, I don't know about the quarterback position. You've got, of course, the graduate transfer from LSU coming in, but not here yet, didn't participate in spring. Nathan Elliott had a good spring game. I mean, I can, you know, the emoji, like the shrug emoji. I'm going to give you that right now in person, Adam. That's, I don't think you know anything yet about the offensive side, because you can't know, because there's still so many moving parts, both from true freshmen, graduate transfers, and just the fact that they need more time, a lot more time. Now, what I do think is going to be interesting is, as we know, Larry Fedora is an offensive guy. He has been successful offensively with multiple different types of players, with multiple different levels of experience. That is going to be, I think, challenged this upcoming season as much as any in his coaching career, save maybe the very first year at Southern Miss when he was coming in and establishing himself. I think his history tells you that Carolina's going to be able to move the football in some form or fashion. But if you're expecting Mitch Trubisky and Ryan Switzer and Mac Hollins and Elijah Hood, you're at least at the beginning of this upcoming season, I think that's not going to be the case.
I think sometimes you have those springs where it's just kind of fine-tuning and you kind of know what's there and you're just making sure nobody gets hurt. That's not what this was. It was more like a what is there?
Yeah.
But
who are you?
Yeah. Can you put your name and tape on your helmet? But exactly what you just said, I think, is 100% right. The guys Carolina just lost, who now we're all distressed about because they were awesome, they didn't show up as 8-star, all-galaxy, super Milky Way performers.
Yep. Wow. But what if super Milky Way?
Yeah, I mean, you don't get many of those. A good part of
extra it, nugget.
A good part of it was that Larry Fedora's offense helps players be successful. So I'm inclined to believe, until he proves otherwise, that that will happen again. But not to that level immediately, because they weren't at that level immediately. You can't expect whoever's the new batch to be last year's Switzer, Howard, Trubisky, right. Hollins. They'll be first year Switzer, Howard, Trubisky, Hollins. That's way different.
Yep.
And but I do think one thing that happened this spring, and we've talked about this on the pod before, I think Larry Fedora totally gets college football, which is different than high school football, pro football, college football. How to win in college football. And one of those ways you win in 2017 college football is you go get graduate transfers when you have a hole. And he did that at multiple positions where Carolina was a little nervous. You're a little less nervous because he went out and filled some of those spots.
I think you got to be careful, and I'm not saying this about the guys who are coming into Carolina. I just think in general, you've got to be careful relying on graduate transfers too much, because I think then you get into the – it's like you almost get into the cycle of needing them all the time.
Right.
So I think it will be important, because I agree with you. I think Carolina had to, and I'm not so convinced that Tar Heel basketball may not need to grab one or two if possible. But I think you just got to be careful that you don't rely on that all the time. You may need to a season or two fill some holes like Carolina desperately needed to this year. But I think you also have to be careful not to rely on. And I'm not saying the Tar Heels are. I'm just saying that that's something you have to be careful about.
I think it's funny how excited people always are about a graduate transfer from another place.
Right.
But if you tell them, well, Carolina's got this guy who's been here 4 years, but I think really he's going to be really good in his fifth year, they'd be like, no.
Right.
We don't want that.
Something shiny and new. That's
yeah,
the whole
we
key.
Want the other guy. I mean, you do realize there's a reason why he's leaving the place where he was.
Right.
Like, something didn't work, whether his fault or the school's fault or a combination. Sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes you're just in the wrong place. But there's a reason.
I've had a couple of people ask about the end of game call for the championship game. And if this is something that I had scripted or thought about or whatever, this is how I approach this situation. Now, I don't know if this is right or wrong or dumb or smart. That's just how I do it. So it's probably dumb. To me, you cannot script the end of the game. Like there's no way you script Luke May's shot against Kentucky, right? You can't be ready for that, nor should you have something prepared in that moment. I don't want to have a flip card that says, okay, last second shot. Here, hold on.
Unexpected by a reserve walk on. Yes, right. I have that here.
Right. So in no way do I ever script anything, honestly. Now, having said that, I'm going to put a little asterisk next to that, because I do think in this particular instance, when you're talking about a championship moment, that if Carolina was up by 30 points or something with a minute to go, that you want to at least have an idea of what you are going to say. So, yes, I did have an idea of what I was going to say, but I did not script it out specifically. Does that make sense? And so that's the best way I can explain it, I think. So, yes, I did have an idea of what I wanted to say. Adam Carrera also asked, did I have one for 2016? I did. In the same way that I just said for 2017. I had an idea of what I was going to say, although I didn't have it written down on a card in front of me, nor did I know word for word what it would be. But so that's I guess that's the best way I can put it.
Has that call now been sent to the third world countries with
the 2016 one?
With the t-shirts from 2016.
That's right.
Somewhere the kids are opening up the box and like, oh, t-shirt. What's this call?
What is this? But so, I don't know if that's all I got.
Well, and you mentioned earlier about how a lot of people think things that you do are easy. And like you mentioned the Luke May thing, and that made me think of it. I remember my exact thoughts as that play was unfolding over the course of those 5 seconds. And it sounded something like this. That's exactly what I was thinking. And so it's a lot tougher than people think when you're in the moment to make sense of something like that is so important.
I rarely make sense. There's no problem with that. Let's see, what else do we have here? Matt Trudwin, our thoughts on if the championship this year happens without 16 and how this year's team measures up defensively versus past teams in the tournament. I feel like we may have talked about this on the last pod, but again, I was in a fog. I don't know. I think the answer to the first question is no.
I agree.
I just don't. And I know I didn't think it played the ending to 2016. I didn't think it played as big a role as ultimately I think it did. So what I'm saying is, I don't think I knew how important it was to the players or how much of a sense of motivation it was for them until it was all over. And then I got a sense of how important it was to them in that particular, with that particular topic. How does this team measure up defensively? There's a couple ways to define this. Statistically, they have the best defensive tournament ever in the history of Carolina basketball. They held all six opponents to below 44%, which is the first time that's ever happened. They also, I think you can qualify that by saying they won the Oregon game, the Gonzaga game. There's one other game in there, maybe Arkansas. I can't remember what it was. They're the three lowest shooting percentages ever for a Carolina team in a victory in the NCAA tournament. It's three times in this particular tournament. So it wasn't happening from that end, so it had to be happening from somewhere. And I think you just – I'll use the old draft term of the eye test. I mean, Justin Jackson did a great job defensively on Malik Monk and on others. Dylan Brooks, for example. Kennedy Meeks did a great job defensively in the post. And I don't know if I have a stat or a analytic to tell you that. I just know it because I saw it.
Jackson and Meeks played defense at a level to which we were not previously aware they were capable. Like, you thought they might possibly be, but just didn't think it was going to happen. But they did, and that's what made the difference.
We have a lot of questions about our thoughts on the Diamond Heels. Now, Carolina baseball's had a terrific season to this point. I'm going to pull up their actual 100% record at this moment because I don't know what it is. But I do know that they have played extraordinarily well. They are, at this moment, 29-8, 14-4 in the ACC. To me, again, this is a little bit from afar. And I mean, we can get a little more in depth on this in the future. And I actually thought about having John Manuel on from Baseball America, who's awesome. when it comes to college baseball coverage. And he's done a lot of ESPN 3 games covering the ACC and the Diamond Heels. So I would like to get him on. A couple of things have stood out to me from afar. One, the Tar Heels have a legit stud number one starter who gives you a good chance to win every single weekend game one in J.B. Bukauskas. I mean, he's just legit. Dude, 6-0. His ERA is 1.4. He has 15 walks and 81 strikeouts. That's really good. They have a super good young number two starter in Luca Dellatri. I hope I said that right. The Saturday starter who started, I think, on Sunday and has immediately was moved up. So right there, you have a great chance to win a couple of games on the weekend because you've got two big-time starters right at the beginning of your weekend rotation. Now, I know they've kind of been looking and searching for the number three starter, and that's not easy to find. I mean, it's not every year your weekend starters were like that year when it was Alex White, Adam Warren, and Matt Harvey. That doesn't happen very often. They also have a really good guy at the back end in Josh Hyatt, who has been super legit. I saw him against NC State. It was a fact in the game Carolina lost on Sunday where he had only pitched like a couple of pitches in the first game, didn't pitch at all on Saturday. They brought him in for a lengthy outing on Sunday, and he is legit at the back end of the bullpen. And they've got some good arms in the middle too. Brett Daniels, Rodney Hutchinson, some guys who have come in a bunch and been very successful out of the bullpen. So, I mean, from that respect, they seem to have a lot of the pieces that you would want. And that's all important. And even in the couple of years here when Carolina hasn't been as good as it normally is, they've still had some decent to pretty good pitching. To me, the big difference is the Tar Heels seem to be hitting a lot more than they have been the last couple of years. And I think you and I saw a ton of college baseball, not as much in the last couple of years, but you and I saw a ton there for a 10-year period. Pitching, pitching is important, and pitching gets you a long way, and pitching can dominate games. At some point, you've got to be able to get hits. At some point, you have to string together a couple of hits. If you have the bases loaded with one out, you've got to put a couple runs on the board. That's just how it is. And I think Carolina went through a couple of seasons where they really struggled in that regard. But now you've got guys like Logan Warmoth, who is really having a terrific year. The kid who graduated early from high school, Ashton McGee. Brian Miller's hitting the ball. Brandon Riley. Cody Roberts is having a better year than he's ever had before. So, I mean, they're hitting the ball. And I think that's been the biggest difference to me, again, from afar.
Yeah, I think the offensive thing is always that in order to make it far, you've got to kind of decide what you are. Like, are you one of the little tiny teams from the West Coast that tries to score one run at a time? Or are you the big guys who hit three-run home runs? And the last couple of years, Carolina has been kind of in the middle of that and not really very good at either. And so they didn't really have an identity. But this year, it seems like they're a little more comfortable. They've always got the pitching. When you've got the guy on Friday night, the odds that you're going to have to burn three bullpen arms on Friday are low.
Right.
Because he's never going to need that. So you're in great shape before Saturday even starts for Saturday. Really, before Friday, you're in good shape for Saturday. I think the only question I would raise to this point is the Coastal that good? Because Carolina opened with what looked like a really tough stretch.
Right.
And 99% of the time, it would have been because those teams are the Coastal power teams.
Miami, but, Georgia Tech, Virginia. Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, every year it's Miami, Georgia Tech, Carolina, Virginia are the four. It feels like kind of jostling at the top.
It feels like this year it might be the Atlantic's turn. They may have, if Carolina, let's say Carolina is the best team in the ACC, who knows if they are. The second and third best team might be in the Atlantic.
Right.
And Carolina's still got to play them. So I think that's the only question mark you might have would be, has Carolina really seen the quality of competition we think they have? And maybe they have.
At this moment, Carolina's four games ahead of Virginia in the ACC's Coastal Division. Carolina's 29, again, this is at this moment. Carolina's 29-8 overall. Virginia's 30-9. Nobody else has more. In fact, nobody else in the Coastal is above 500 overall, not just in conference play, but overall. So you got Carolina and Virginia, and then it seems like there's a pretty big drop-off after that. I mean, Georgia Tech right now is 4-14 in conference play. Yeah. Meanwhile, up in the Atlantic, you know, Louisville is 31-5 overall. Clemson's 30-7. Wake Forest is having a great year. They're 28-11. Florida State went through a little bit of a dip, but seems to be playing better. NC State's okay. Yes, to answer your question, I do think that that half of the league is stronger. However, Carolina has, you know, swept Florida State in Tallahassee. They took 2 of 3 from NC State, which is always, I still think that may be the nastiest rivalry that I have been a part of as far as covering. Just maybe Carolina State football. And I don't mean the best or the hottest. I just mean the, like, the one that's filled with hate the most might be Carolina State baseball. Carolina does have a series with Clemson this year. It's in Chapel Hill. I don't think they play Louisville or Wake Forest, though. I think that's right.
Which is a great break,
yeah,
potentially.
Yeah. So I think the best way to put it is it's been a great year so far, and there's a long way to go, though, too. But I think certainly you have to be encouraged with what you've seen. Carolina is clearly one of the better teams in the conference and in the country to this point.
As it sits right now, Carolina would be a national seed,
sure,
which is what you have to do to have a
legit
chance of going to Omaha. And then once you get to Omaha, no one has any clue. No matter what they tell you, they do not know.
Yeah, it's wide open. There's one more thing that I wanted to talk about. We're running a little low on time because we got to do something else here in a second. We've gotten a lot of people. Well, we already talked about the Rafters because we had a lot of people wanting to know top five players in the Rafters who aren't in the Rafters. But I think we've addressed that, right?
We could save that for the summer.
Yeah. I did get a couple questions about our schedule moving forward. I think the best way to put it is that there will be regular pods, but not as frequent as what we had done in the past. So we're not going to be doing 2 a week every week. I would think of it more as once a week or once every other week. Plus, we're going to be trying to get guests, and so we'll be throwing those in as well as we move along. We will have regular pods, but it's not going to be as regular as what we did during the season. And then once we get back to like mid-August or something, or late August when football's right on the cusp again, then we'll get back into our rotation.
And a lot of times in the summer, the guests kind of happen irregularly.
Right.
So you might wake up one morning.
Yeah, we may.
There might be a surprise pod.
Yeah, we're not going to be on our Tuesday-Friday schedule. That's important to keep in mind, too. That could come at any time.
Keep your head on a swivel, because a pod might hit you right between the eyes.
Adam, anything else before we shut it down for today?
Yeah. One thing. We talked on here before about the story about grading film with the coaches.
Yes.
And I've had a couple people email me and say, I never saw that story. If you're not in the Rams Club, you should be. And I think people have this perception you join the Rams Club to get tickets. In 2017, that's not always necessary. There are other ways to get tickets. You join the Rams Club because when Kennedy Meek says something like, I really appreciate all the people who gave me an opportunity to go to school here, it's the greatest opportunity I've ever had, you want that to be you. And much smaller than that, you get Born and Bred magazine, which has that story in it, and also has sat down this week with Kennedy Meeks, Sean May, and Tyler Hansbrough. Those three guys together in an interview, the three starting centers from Carolina's last three championship teams, that's going in there. That was an awesome interview. Sean May, as always, as we know from the pod, actually Tyler too, for that matter, were great, and it was fun to see them interact with Kennedy. But really, I'm always surprised when people aren't members of the Rams Club, because I just assume they are, because I don't know. It's just how it is. But really, give it some thought. And if you don't, like, if you think you've got to be an alumni or you've got to give $1 million or whatever, none of that part is true.
As little as $100 a year, right?
Yeah. And you get invited to cool things like the Tar Heel Tour with Jones, and he'll personally shout you out from the podium and, like, tell Coach Williams to quiet down so that Jones can recognize all the pod listeners.
Adam will come to your house and personally do a podcast with you. All right, for today, we got to go. Thanks for being with us on another edition of The Carolina Insider.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.